Welcome to episode 26 of Metal Talk TV, and today I'm delighted to be joined by the Queen of Blues Rock Guitar, Joanna Connor. Joanna's got an album out soon, 4801 South Indiana Avenue, and a fantastic new single out now called I Feel So Good. Joanna, welcome to Metal Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, 3.5 weeks to go, getting excited?
I am. We've had a lot of interest already, so it's definitely building momentum every day.
Nice, nice. If you don't mind, can we go back to some of the earlier days first?
Of course.
Excellent. So when did you first catch the guitar bug?
I grew up in Massachusetts, not too far from Boston, and that's when I first started. My mother was a huge music fan, so I was exposed to all kinds of music, including blues, jazz, rock, reggae, classical, everything. Wow. And she got me a guitar when I was 7, and then I played it for a little bit, but picked it back up again when I was around 14, and I never stopped.
And what kind of made you take the blues route?
Blues was something, like I said, I grew up with, and I went to see a lot of the Chicago blues acts when they would tour. Mm-hmm. And it was just the honesty of the music, the passion of the music, and all the rock that I really treasured was very blues influenced. So it all kind of connected.
Cool. So people like Roy Cooder and picking up the slide and things like that. That's kind of your background, yeah?
Yes, it is.
And I read you had your first band at 17.
I did. Yes, it was an acoustic band with a drummer and kind of what I guess you'd call now Americana. There was no label like that back then, but that and we did perform every week. And so, yeah, I was a little too young to be where I was, but they let me in and I did what I did.
Oh, wow. So you're kind of sneaking into the bars and things like that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And you moved to Chicago around the early 80s, I believe.
Yes. In 84, I moved to Chicago because I visited Chicago a few years prior. And I already knew I loved a lot of the music coming from it, but it was even more spectacular than I imagined. So I said, that's it. I have to live there. I want to be there and really become a student of the blues firsthand.
And Chicago's the best place to pick it up, yeah?
Indeed.
So I read you debuted at the Chicago Club in Kingston Mines in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you ended up playing regularly, yeah? Playing with people like James Cotton, Junior Wells, Buddy Guy, A.C. Reed. Must have been fantastic to, to play with those people. And the 80s was such a, kind of late 80s, early 90s, was such a kind of magical era for music, yeah, before streaming and before people would be messing around on their phones, you know. I can certainly remember some fantastic gigs around that time.
I totally agree with you.
and a great place to learn your craft.
Indeed, yes, it was. It was, I couldn't have asked for a better, I call it Blues University ever. And I was really privileged that, you know, most of the musicians were totally supportive and, you know, I mean, I had to earn my way. It wasn't like they were going to give it to me, but they mentored me and they taught me a lot of things and they were patient and pretty supportive. You know, it wasn't all roses, but it was mostly a very positive thing. And the best thing I did, I think, for myself musically. Yes.
It must have been quite ballsy for a 22-year-old to up sticks to Chicago, yeah?
It was. I always had a lot of balls, shall we say. I felt like if I had something I wanted to do, I wasn't going to let anything stop me from doing it, and I didn't. And I always felt that, you know, women were so underserved or unrecognized, mm-hmm. and there weren't a lot of role models for me. So I wanted to be the best musician that I could be. So I always sought out those opportunities. You know, I felt like I wanted to be around people that were better than myself, you know, so I did.
The best way to learn that way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you're more of a live performer? That's where your destiny always was, your passion?
Yeah, that really, I mean, even when I played in school growing up, you know, our little concerts we do with. I was in a school band with the saxophone. I love making music with the other students and being in front of people. Just the energy and the feeling I got, I was like, it kind of hooked me the first time I ever did it. So it was kind of like you chase that all the time. And, you know, we were live blues players or live performers touring constantly all the time. I mean, you see people like B.B. King to right up to their last breath, you know, so that's what we do. And that's where I feel most comfortable because I've done it so much.
Cool. And I read you even jammed a set with Jimmy Page.
I did.
Wow. How was that?
Oh, it was surreal. I mean, the whole situation was, you know, we always had, like, we played a very long show at the Kingston Mines, and we were the only band. When I was in Dion Payton's band, we had a house band there, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday was the only band, and we opened from 9 till 4 in the morning. And so, like, the last few hours would kind of be more of a jam, and we'd be looking for musicians to play. You know, decent ones, of course. And he's like, yeah, Joanna, go up and play. There's some English guy here. He's going to play my guitar. He didn't even know who he was. And I was like, so I walked out going to the stage, and he was with a guy from Atlantic Records, and who I knew because he was always come see us play. And he's like, Joanna, come here. I want you to meet someone. It was Jimmy Page. And I was, and then we jammed together. He was a gentleman. He was really sweet, nice, really down to earth and humble. And I mean, it's something I'll never forget. It's almost like those five songs or whatever, like they're just there. It felt like it was an eternity, but in a good way, you know?
I think that's kind of the time that you wish they had invented mobile phones, yeah, because it would have been cool to.
Yes, there's no photograph of this, you know?
No, nightmare. Yeah. So just jumping ahead slightly, on the new album, you've got Bad News, the Luther Allison song, which is a really kind of, it's kind of a heavy, almost Jimmy Page, Zeppelin-esque blues riff behind it. Yeah. Was that kind of rocky Zeppelin blues and Jimmy Page? Yeah. That was an inspiration to you as well.
Yeah. I think Jimmy Page probably had more influence on me than any other guitar player, you know. I listened to him so much, and, you know, he also, you know, he had like the Celtic folk thing and the Middle Eastern thing he'd throw in, and then, you know, the blues and the rock, and it just all really appealed to me. And I listened to it so much. I mean, I just feel like it's in me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to issue a spoiler, but we were kind of arguing over your album, your new album at Metal Talk, who was going to interview and who's going to review you, and the review's not posted yet, but Metal Talk's Paul Monkhouse, he's talking about the track Bad News, and he says, if I can quote, he said, this packs more soul and drama into 6 exquisite minutes than most modern blues records manage in an album's worth. The vocals, guitar playing and keys work sublime. So I think we'll get on to the new album shortly, but he's, I mean, that was, as soon as I heard that, I think it's the third track, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, thank you. That was, wow, I got chills. Thank you.
Excellent. Nice. You've played over in Europe before, haven't you?
Yes, I was actually managed by Thomas Roof, you know, R-U-F, he has Roof Records, so before he even had a record label, but he called me up, he was looking for a female guitar player. And that was like 1990. And so from like 1990 to 99, I toured a lot. You know, mostly, you know, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, the Netherlands, France, you know. I didn't get to the UK. I only played there once. But but I did spend a lot of time, and I toured a lot with Luther Allison because that was his other act.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And then you kind of had your kind of sliding doors moment, maybe the Walking Blues YouTube video, that went viral. Was that was actually a barbecue party? Was it, or
it was? So there's a man named Jim Carty, and he lives in outside of Boston, and he would always like help the musicians out. Like he was like a friend, and he, you know, if you needed a place to stay, if you needed a gig or whatever, he'd always you know, help you. And so one day he's like, oh, Joanna, do you think you could play at my house on a Saturday? And I know you're on tour out here, and you know, it'll be a nice thing. I'll throw you a few dollars. And I was like, sure, Jim, you know. And it was in this tiny little yard, and the neighbor next door was really pissed off that we were playing, and he kept turning on the water, the sprinkle on the grass. He kept going. I mean, it was just funny. He called the police. And so then when that happened, when he filmed it and it went so ballistic, I was like, of all the places and all the gigs, that just, it's funny to me, you know?
Yeah. But it's just racked up, like, it's racked up millions of views, you know, and reading through the comments that people have added, you know, it must have kind of like pushed you out there a bit more, didn't it?
It did. And it actually landed me myself and my band a part in a movie that's coming out.
Really?
That was, yeah, with Ben Affleck is the star, and a guy named Adrian Lynn, who's the director, who's, I believe he's English, and he directed Fatal Attraction, but he hasn't made a movie in years. And he said, I stumbled upon, you know, I wanted a blues type band for this one scene. And I kind of stumbled upon you playing in this backyard. So we went to New Orleans December of 2019, and we were filmed for this movie. It's called Deep Water. So it was supposed to be out already, but it's supposed to come out next summer. So that was incredible.
So with your Gibson guitar and everything, that's your that's your model of choice these days. Yeah.
I mean, I always loved Les Pauls, and you know, I didn't really ever have the money to get one, because you know, they're pretty pricey with the new one. And then Gibson kind of came along and they gave me an endorsement deal, which is fabulous. So but I truly love them, you know. They're heavy, but they're wonderful.
Yeah. So your previous album, Rise, I was flipping through that, and there's some, you know, that's your main band.
And
there's some fantastic songs on there.
Thank you. Flip
was one that I noted down with the great sort of slapping bass on there.
Yeah.
And was that the sort of album that, on the back of things like the YouTube video, was that something that kind of got you noticed a bit more outside of America?
The Rise album, I mean, it definitely helped. I mean, I've gotten very good, most of the records I've made have gotten pretty good press notice, and but nothing like this record that's out now. I mean, this is a whole nother league of everything.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let's talk about the new record then. You play Mostly Slide on it, yes?
Yeah.
It's a fantastic slide duet right at the end as well. And obviously Joe Bonamassa is involved now. Can you tell us the story of how Joe got involved?
Well, from one of the videos that was out there on social media, he retweeted it, that's where I saw it, on Twitter. And I was like, wow, Joe Bonamassa retweeted him, and he said some nice things. And so I messaged him through Twitter. I'm like, hey, this is Joanna Connor. Thank you. And what a compliment, what an honor, blah, blah, blah. And this is my contact info. And like within an hour, he messaged me. So I had given him my phone number. He's like, I want to help you, or I can help you. And I was like, oh my goodness. Talk about the best sentence ever. And so we started conversing. That was like May of 2019. And we started talking. He's like, you know, I'd really like to produce a record for you, because I have an idea and a vision of what I would like to do with you in the studio. And so we kept talking. He goes, well, would you trust me? Because I'm really going to push you really hard. And I was like, yeah, I think I can trust you, Joe. You have a very nice track record. And he's a fantastic musician. So really, he planned everything, like from the songs. I mean, he asked me, of course, approval. It was like, he said, you're going to do this. He's like, well, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And he picked the studio, and he really was very, very hands-on. But I think it was a really great, I wasn't sure how it would turn out, you know, because you never know if there's going to be chemistry or not, and there was, and it was it just was just a beautiful experience. And I think there was a lot of just fantastic playing on the record from everyone.
Wow. Yeah. So the actual songbook of the album. Yeah. You worked with Joe, although he mainly picked those. You were over the moon with the selections that were made.
Yeah. And then him and Josh Smith sat, and myself, and like, they did a lot of, you know, kind of tweaking the arrangements, making them a little bit different, which was really great to watch. And I think they did a tremendous job on that as well. So he said, basically, he was just laying out for, you know, all this music for me to walk in and do what I do best and, you know, play slide and sing. And the singing part was a whole nother story, but we did everything together in the studio live. We never did more than two takes on each. We did the whole album in 4 days.
Wow. That's impressive. Is Joe a hard taskmaster? I mean, I guess you know, with the power of your vocals coming through on this as well. Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, he said he was, but, you know, like I always tell people, if you play in the Chicago blues scene, especially at 22, in some of the roughest neighborhoods in the country, you know, I don't know, it didn't seem that horrible to me. But he was definitely straightforward and a straight shooter, but really that's how it is here. People here, you know, they totally speak their mind, the musicians, to each other. And, you know, there can even be fights about things. I've seen fights over songs and chords and, you know, like serious, like guns coming. So, you know, I told Joe, I said, nothing you can do really is going to rattle me that much. But, you know, he's really a sweetheart. You know, people say what they say, but he is just a really nice human.
Yeah. In terms of your guitar setup, was anything different on this album, or is it, you know, your kind of standard fare?
No, I always use pedals. You know, I'm not a huge, I don't own like an arsenal, but I have my pedals, and I'm used to that. And I do play some things on Rise. It was no pedals. It was an acoustic guitar or a straight guitar to an amp. But 90% of the time I'm stepping on some kind of pedal for leads. And he's like, nope, no pedals. And I was like, first I was like, oh no. But you know, we had this great vintage amp of his, and just cranked up to the max. And you know, that was it. We just used two different guitars in that amp, no pedals. And so that was different for me. But I think you got a great tone out of everything. I'm satisfied with it. I was surprised because I didn't know what to expect, you know, but there was enough grit in it to push it through. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And with an impressive sounding lineup there, you must have been over the moon at the group of musicians that Joe had put together.
Oh, yes. It was an honor to play with them. And another group of really nice, sweet gentlemen. And what great players. I mean, I felt right at home, and even more so. They were very inspiring.
Do you remember any kind of first morning nerves, or did you just, yeah, this is fine, we'll get right into it?
I was nervous for the whole week before I even got on the plane. I was just like, you know, this is a big deal here. So all the way down on the plane, I was like talking to myself in my head, like, you know, giving myself pep talks. And I was really nervous the day we went to Joe's house and kind of did pre-production, just me, him, and Josh sitting there with guitars in his living room. And I was like, he could tell I was kind of shy. Mm-hmm. And then, but once we hit the studio and Joe talked, and I met the musicians, and Joe's like, hey, we're going to go in here. I want you guys to kick ass. We're not going to go, you know, we're only going to play things two times or less, one or two times. And if it's not working, we're going to keep moving. You know, I want this to be, you know, have power. And he gave us all like a pep talk. And then once we started playing, the music just, it took over. And that's when the nerves disappeared, you know.
Right. Once you get into the rhythm, yeah. So would you say from your part, a lot of the stuff was kind of improvised on the moment, or did you go in with a kind of set plan?
Oh, there's never a set plan with me. It's all improvised. Like there was nothing planned at all. So everything you're hearing is literally off the top of my head in the studio.
Cool. Wow, that's impressive. And recording highlight, have you got a favorite highlight, or is it just the whole thing?
I mean, the whole thing was incredible, you know, but, you know, having that, it's funny because Joe and Josh were both playing rhythm guitar the whole time. Josh took one lead in on the song Trouble, Trouble. But Joe, I was like, Joe, do you want to like do a solo on this record? And he's like, would you like me to? And I'm like, yes, I would like. Yeah. And then he came up with the slide, you know, us doing that slide duet on the last song. And so that was marvelous, of course. And then also playing next to Reese Winans, because I was literally sitting next to him in the studio. And I mean, I didn't tell Reese the story, but I was at the last show that Stevie Ray ever did. And I had backstage passes because we had mutual people. Because it was near where I live, too.
So you went to see Stevie then, yeah?
Yeah, and I could have went backstage, and I didn't go. I was like, I don't want to be one of those hanger-oners, you know, whatever, fanning and being a pain in the butt. I'll meet him someday. You know, we'll do a show together somewhere someday. And then look what happened. And then I'm sitting next to Reese, and it came to me. I'm like, wow, talk about a dream come true kind of thing. And I started to tear up, and after he was doing his solo, he's like, girl, I'm not that good. What you over there crying? And I was like, yeah, you're that good. But he didn't know. I wasn't going to say. I didn't want to bring it up. So I don't know how that would affect him. But, yeah, that was a moment I'll never forget.
And then the last time you put the guitar in the case when it's all finished, yeah, sadness or just like, wow?
Both. I mean, wow, that it was amazing, but it was kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, this is over. You know, anything that's great in life, you don't want it to end. So,
no, this is true. This is true. And I hope with, you know, that now phones have been invented. Yeah, I hope you managed to get some decent selfies. Yeah.
We did. I got a lot of sneaky photos too.
Yeah, we look forward to those. Yeah. So I guess the plan after this was to do some tour, yeah, a bit of Russia, a bit of Europe, things like that. But obviously that's not going to be happening at the moment, is it?
No. I did have a conversation with a very prominent UK booking guy that my publicist turned me on to, and he wants to take me on. And we'll make an official announcement, but so hopefully I'll be coming to the UK February 2022. But I mean, I'm sitting here waiting for this year, you know, like when it happened last year, all the festivals and stuff said, oh, we'll rebook everybody next year, but we don't even know. We're all in the same, I think most of the world's in the same state. We just, you know, they open up, they close down, open up, they close. We just don't know what's going to happen. And the states, you know, everything's kind of a big mess, so.
it's pretty messy over here, yeah. Not only from a musical point of view, yeah. No one can gig. Obviously, there's arguments about how much artists get from streaming. Yeah, the poor performing rights society have just slapped another tariff on things. So everyone's just,
oh really?
Yeah, everyone's just up in the air at the moment.
Oh yeah.
But hey, we'll get there in the end. So I guess one of the future plans must be to play on the stage with Joe.
Yeah,
we're gonna see that one day for sure. Yeah,
I would think so. I mean, we were supposed to do like a live show with the band in Chicago, the band from the record, and record it and like put it on a DVD. And but yeah, we're just gonna see what's happening in the future. But I know something will happen with Joe. I mean, he's like one of the busiest guys in the world, so
yeah,
I don't bother him too often. But I'm sure that that's going to happen somewhere.
So the old saying is the blues will never die. Yep. Do you think you're working on passing the torch on? What are your hopes for blues music in the future?
Well, I hope that two things happen. I hope that the blues purists will loosen up the reins and allow new life to be injected into the music. And it has. I mean, it's going to keep evolving. And I also hope that people that are supposedly playing blues on the same hand give the respect and do the homework of the people that originally made it, you know, to make it, because blues has to have authenticity, and you don't have to be a historian, but I still think you have to understand it and put some hours into playing it and having it become a part of you. I don't think it's anything you can just deliver like, okay, now I'm going to play the blues. I mean, and I think that's a problem with some of the modern blues stuff. It doesn't feel real in a sense, because I don't think it the hours have been put in, or the sweat, you know, into it, the sweat equity. So I'm hoping that people will do that, artists coming forward. And I just hope that in general, younger people get a chance to discover it, so it'll keep living on, you know. But there's some sharp millennials, I say, out there that are hungry for, I guess, older music, whether it be rock or blues or whatever. They're like digging up stuff, or their parents might listen to it. I mean, vinyl's coming back, so
yeah.
I don't think it'll ever go away. I mean, it's a treasured art form, so it'll always be around some kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, Larkin Poe, a young duet. You know, they had an album that had Howlin' Wolf and Robert Johnson songs on. So I think there are some of the youngsters pushing it out there.
And yeah, they're wonderful. I'm a fan of theirs. I mean, they really get it, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and also Bonamassa is almost like positioning himself as a historian of the blues with his Keeping the Blues Alive Foundation, you know, supporting other artists, yeah, like yourself, and also the COVID Foundation work that he did to raise money for people who are struggling at this time. So, you know, I think hopefully the future might be reasonably bright.
I think so too.
And it's great, you know, with something like your album coming out, you know, hopefully you can be the inspiration for thousands of other people when they listen to it, and, you know, so they can find their musical passion and kind of push it through.
I hope that would be wonderful. I hope so.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, look, we wish you all the best of success with the new album, Metal Talk. Like I say, we were fighting over the album, and we're all impressed with the energy and the performances of the album, and the way it just kind of scanned through is brilliant. Anything else you'd like to say to anyone?
I hope to see you all someday soon at a show, and please buy the album in the meantime.
Fantastic. So Joanna Connor, 4801 South Indiana Avenue, out 26th of February. It's brilliant. It's absolutely fabulous. So buy it. Joanna, thank you very much.
You too. Thank you so much.
And we'll see you on the road when you come over to the UK 2022.
Indeed. Yes.
Wonderful. Brilliant. Thank you, Joanna.
Bye-bye. Gotcha.